Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts as they share with you the insider's guide to property investing.
All right, welcome folks. You're on the Property Couch with Bryce Holdaway and Ben Kingsley, giving you the insider's guide to property investing. How are you, Ben?
Good, Bryce. Yourself?
Not too bad, thank you. Now, of course, since we last did our podcast last week, a very important world event's happened. Can you remember?
That croquet thing.
Australia won the World Cup cricket. Tell me you even watched a few overs on Sunday.
Look, I had to give Channel 9 some ratings, so I flipped over to it just to see the score.
Very good. Congratulations to the Australian cricket team. But to more important matters, we're going to finish...
Oh, you mean the footy?
We want to talk about Collingwood, do we?
Well, there's that, and also the Essendon. Big result there.
Big result.
So, yeah, you know, you're never going to win either way, so wait for the appeals.
Absolutely. So, and of course, we won't get down to your beloved Collingwood and see how they've gone through the week as well. But look, we're on the fourth part of our four-part series on the property investment formula, where we've covered, we started off with cash flow management. We then went into borrowing power. Last week, we did asset selection, and this week, we're going to round it off with defence.
Yeah.
What does defence mean, Ben?
Well, I mean, obviously you can see it's the A, B, C, D that we've tried to put together. But what defence effectively means is risk minimisation or mitigation, as we like to say. There's always risk in property investing. So, you know, just like anything we do in life, it carries risk. And in property, there's a lot of different risks. So what I thought we'd do was just work through the risks that are associated in each of the different categories or elements that we talk about. And then also talk more importantly about the individual and in terms of the defence side that we put up around that. So, you know, when you're going to invest in property and we talk about cash flow management, what's your risk defence or what's your mitigation defence there? And that is about making sure you unpack your story. Mm. So where's all your money going? How much money you're going to need? Provisioning for one-off items like cars and then factoring in the school fees and those types of things. So the best way to have a defence strategy before you invest in property is to actually know what those cash flows look like. And when you know what those cash flows look like, you come up the other side and you can be, you still understand that, you know, with the cash flows, you're still going to have to manage that and you're going to have to manage your spending habits. But ultimately, you come out the other side thinking, all right, so I've looked at my risk and my defence is I've done my numbers and I'm okay. Talking about borrowing power, when we talk about borrowing power, what's our risk mitigation there? Well, ultimately, the big one is, you know, is the lender that I'm working with, are they reliable? You know, are they going to be around? And obviously with government guarantees and so forth, we've got some real comfort around some of the lenders. But, you know, only recently we saw banks here building, you know, financials sort of collapse. And there's still a few things we, you know, we, for those who have lived long enough, we know about Pyramid and, you know, the state banks where we see real troubles there. So one thing we want to do is we want to work with a stable financial institution. Yep. And in terms of then we get down to the nitty gritty when we do our servicing and so forth, what we want to do is basically make sure that again, that we're lending appropriately, that we've got enough in the tank. And the defence side is to actually have a side buffer. So if something was to go wrong in your situation, you know, unexpected job loss or whatever, we've actually got a little buffer there that can buy us some time. Mm. So that's the defence strategy around borrowing. We move into asset selection. And Bryce, you know, what's your yarn on asset selection?
Yeah, look, I think the risk mitigation here is to really just look at all properties through three filters. One, is it investment grade? Two, does it have some form of scarcity? And three, does it have owner-occupier appeal? So the investment grade for me is an investment grade suburb first, and we talked about that a couple of weeks ago. So if someone wants to get some more detail on that, just rewind a couple of sessions. And we're also going to talk about that at more length in an upcoming podcast. But investment grade is typically somewhere between $300,000 and $850,000 as a price point. There are exceptions to that, but generally speaking, that's where the bell curve is. Scarcity, if it's an apartment, here in Brisbane, 12 or less in the building. In Sydney, 30 or less in the building. And in Melbourne, 21 or less in the building. And if it's a house, usually some form of scarcity in terms of supply of land, so no new subdivisions, or ideally some period features to the house or the architecture, because that's got some appeal to the owner-occupier market. And then the third one is that owner-occupier appeal. Owner-occupiers buy with their heart, not their calculators, whereas investors buy with their calculators. So effectively, for me, the defence is looking at all properties that I'm looking to buy for myself or for a client through those three filters first before we go through a range of other things.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you know, in digging deeper into what you're talking about, owner-occupier appeal, but basically what you're saying is if we go and buy in mining towns or regional centres and if the lifestyle element isn't there, the first thing I'm going to do in terms of from a defence point of view is understand our risk reward. So we're going into those areas to potentially get high capital gains quickly, but it's speculative. So when you've got speculative assets like mining towns, you've got to understand that there's high volatility in there. So from a defence point of view, we wouldn't take clients into that market until they've got, you know, over $3 million in property value. So if we're then going to risk $500,000 in a speculative investment or a high risk investment, the defence is we've been able to buy in blue chip locations and in good, stable cities that have diversified industry and, you know, job prospects and good income growth in those job prospects. So all of that wraps that up. And then
Ben, if I just jump in there, I think that's some real gold there because quite often people get seduced by the next best thing.
Yep.
And the mining story up until just recently had been part of that.
Mm.
And what you've just said there is a really good framework, because we're into frameworks, in how people can analyse what they should be buying. Because if you haven't got an investment property already, there's a steep learning curve in that first one. So why would you add the complexity and steepness to the curve by going into a mining town on your first investment property? So, you know, I guess...
Well, people are seduced, aren't they? They're seduced by the income story, you know, by this mega growth that is, has either happened already, so they're the last in. So, I mean, you know, we only need to have a look at some of the areas of Queensland now where people have, you know, had their pants pulled down. Just sad stories of buying around that sort of $400,000 mark, and these things are now valuing up at sort of $220,000 to $250,000. It's just a disaster for those people who are caught up in the hype that occurs around that. So did they implement defence? No. Mm. Did they look at their risk mitigation strategy? No. They basically just went greed and they jumped in at the higher end and unfortunately, or they've been advised accordingly. So, you know, we've picked up a couple of recent clients who have bought into different locations and they've come to us because unfortunately they've realised they've been duped by a scammer or someone who had no idea what they were doing. And, you know, whether they are a spruiker or whatever, or they're literally just dumb in terms of they don't really know what they're talking about. They've just, you know, they've just got on the bandwagon to try and flog stock in these so-called booming locations. So that is the sad reality of those people who have bought into those areas that are going to do their dough.
And under FOMO as well, the fear of missing out. And that's a defence strategy alone there, just don't get caught up in that at all in terms of the fear of missing out. One of the things I find in as a defence is to really unpack who you're getting advice from. And we talked about this last week. That's a whole podcast in itself. But quite often, because people love property investment, it's the great Australian barbecue topic, quite often people can be taking advice from enthusiastic amateurs. And I mean that with total respect. Yep. People love property, they love talking about it, but it's not until you've seen a couple of cycles, you've been doing it yourself, you've been, you know, investing for over a decade, you've been advising clients. We see portfolios all the time. So we get the benefit of being able to iron off the edges because we see so much. But if you are taking advice from an enthusiastic amateur, it's not until down the track that you actually realise that the advice probably wasn't in your best interest.
Oh, look, it's so true, Bryce. I talk about it's the immaturity of the property investment industry. There are so many self-made people telling their story, but they're telling their story in an upward boom. So, you know, we've had 23 years of positive economic growth, and so the property market's done exceptionally well during those times with low interest rates. So the rising tides lifted all ships. But my question for those people is, have they done any formal education around how you advise other people and what are, you know, the risk profiles of people and what are their goals and are you aligning those goals? No, you're not. Mm-hmm. You mentioned it before in one of the other podcasts where you're basically, you know, you walk into a doctor's surgery and you've written, you know, you've been prescribed a script straight away before they've even analysed your situation. So our view is there's going to be a lot of people who are going to lose good money, good hard-earned money in the next few years as the marketplace adjusts itself. And that's a sad story for me. So I would want anyone that I'm getting property investment advice from to be formally qualified in regards to, you know, that current situation, in regards to how do they advise others rather than being a one-trick pony and trying to say, well, this is how I did it, so just follow me, when in reality there's seasonality. There's different times when you go into different types of marketplace, and that comes down to the science of asset selection, which, you know, we've touched on and we'll continue to talk about throughout these podcasts.
No, I agree. And it's finding that fine balance between someone who's got the quals in terms of their qualifications, yep, but has also got the runs on the board.
Yeah.
Because if you're sort of too skewed either way, that's often not ideal as well. So before we go on to sort of the last part of defence, Ben, if we can just recap, you know, we started off with cash flow management. Would you say the biggest buffer that some... Because we're of the view that budgets simply don't work.
They don't.
So the biggest defence that someone can have, really, in terms of cash flow management is to actually have a look at cash flow management in the first place. But once they have, to put a system around their cash flow management, that means A, they can't consciously overspend, B, they can see where their money's going, and C, they can trap some surplus and use it positively towards their favourite asset class. Clearly, we're biased towards residential real estate.
We are. Yeah, look, I think from that point of view, what we're talking about there, cash flow and borrowing overflow each other. Mm. That buffer doesn't have to be a savings account.
Mm.
A lot of people might think, well, I've got to save up $50,000 and keep it to the side. No, it can actually be in a borrowing facility that sits at a zero balance, but in reality can be called upon in the event that we need it. So, you know, the way in which I would do it as a good rule of thumb is I would work out my cash flows and I would say to myself, okay, based on what the house absolutely needs, in other words, my essential needs from a cost point of view, so my expenditure that I know is fixed, releasing all the discretionary stuff. So in other words, I still need some form of clothing. I still need, you know, to have the shelter, so to pay my rent or to pay my mortgage. I still need to pay all the bills, all those strong. But then it's the discretionary stuff. So it's the dining out. It's that type of thing. That doesn't need to be in there. And from that, I get my monthly number. Mm. And let's say that monthly number is, say, $4,000 a month. So I've got that $4,000 a month. So if for me, I would then say, okay, what's the minimum buffer I need for 6 months of support? So that is my absolute minimum. So from that point of view, that's $24,000. So if I have $24,000 and I know that I can tighten the budget up when if an event occurs, I've got 6 months to reestablish myself before I have to do anything around panic selling or panic buying or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good rule of thumb. I mean, I prefer 12,
yeah,
but 6 would be an absolute minimum. So hence that $50,000 is a pretty nice number. And that moves into, you know, I know we're recapping, but going back into the borrowing power story, that's about saying it doesn't have to be in savings because, God, it can take us forever to save that sort of money. We can use the equity and we can be sensible about leverage and we can make sure that we've tested our numbers. And so from the borrowing point of view, that is saying, well, I'm going to get that, whether it be in a interest-only facility and park it in an offset, or I'm going to get a line of credit facility, which is basically starts at a zero balance.
Mm.
So if I don't touch it, I don't need it, but it just sits over there as an emergency component.
So the biggest buffer, in my view, for the borrowing power discipline or the mastery is to get an investment-savvy mortgage broker.
Yep.
Not a mortgage broker, an investment-savvy mortgage broker. Because I think if you go to the bank, they're going to give you the best product they can give you. If you go to a mortgage broker, they're going to help you transact. If you go to an investment-savvy mortgage broker, they're going to put a strategy in place for lending to help you build this portfolio. So in terms of borrowing power, that would be the biggest tip or the biggest defence. Asset selection, if you're going to do it yourself, you need to understand that it needs to go through those three filters of investment grade, needs to have some scarcity, it needs to have some owner-occupier appeal. Now, as we sort of wind up this four-part series, Ben, we really do want to talk about defence overall in terms of the portfolio as well. So we want to really protect ourselves in terms of our assets,
mm-hmm,
our income,
correct,
and our lifestyle. So do you want to...
Yeah, so let's unpack that. Basically what that's saying, Bryce has summarised it beautifully. The assets that we're buying, again, how do we mitigate risk on those assets? Well, insurances are a way in which we do that. So the common one is obviously we insure the building. Now, in terms of insuring the building, what we're talking about there is if it's a freestanding house, we basically get a building insurance on it, and then we insure some of the contents inside that as well. In a body corporate scenario, you know, the insurances on the building are all protected under the body corporate. So that's the first thing in terms of that is absolute minimum in terms of what we should never have an asset of such high value not protected. I mean, we even pay insurances on our cars, but You know, this is an absolute must. Now, what then lies behind that is the real good mitigation from an investor's point of view, which is getting the landlord protection insurances in place. Now, landlord protection insurance is effectively comes in a few forms. So malicious damage, and it can come in the form of, you know, tenants fleeing and not paying their rent. So there's some really good, you know, insurance brokers out there who specialise in this particular space. I think EBM is one of them. You've got, what's the other big mob?
Aon.
So there's a few going around in that sort of space that sort of do that. But effectively, you get your quotes and you look at that and you say, okay, that is now the asset. So I've done everything within my powers to protect that asset. So if something was to go wrong with it, flood, fire, and also malicious damage from a tenant or so forth, I'm well served, and that should be put in your budget.
It's also the defence against anxiety, because you know most people have the view that they're worried about not getting a tenant, or worse, they're worried about, you know, someone from the outlaw motorcycle gang sort of building their Harley Davidson on their living room floor. With landlord's protection insurance, that gives you the sleep, you know, the peace of mind to sleep at night,
yep,
that you're covered under a range of situations.
Yep.
Now, in terms of income and lifestyle, largely under the domain of a licensed, experienced and competent financial planner.
Correct.
But essentially, if you're going to go to the effort to build this portfolio, and it's obviously relying on your ability to earn an income, you don't want to be vulnerable if something happens to you outside of your control, that for a short period of time, or when I say short, maybe 6 or 12 months, you're no longer able to earn your income. You don't want the house of cards to come crashing down.
No, I mean, if we're going to, you know, have this portfolio of properties, we need income. Mm-hmm. And to protect our income, we need an income protection policy. So yes, we would sit down and we would go through the right protocols in terms of working with a financial planner, to work out what is the most appropriate level of protection we need. And then we put our application in based on the advice work done by a qualified and licensed professional, to get that income protection policy in play. And that again, you know, it's sort of, what it does is in most cases, most policies only give you around that 70% of your income. Now, that again is about buying time. So if something was to happen where you did have to put an income claim in, hopefully you're going to return to work. So if it's a broken leg and you're off work for 15 weeks or 20 weeks or something like that, we're hoping that that policy will only be needed for short term. If it's needed for long term, it does just buy us a little bit of time to make sure that we're available to get our affairs in order. And if it means that, you know, we've also got the buffer account to call on as well. So that's a good defence strategy.
Now, Ben, worse still, if your lifestyle's affected, isn't it? So that's something that people don't really want to think about.
No.
But something we should.
Yeah, look, I mean, the statistics are around that sort of 1 in 3 of us are going to be diagnosed with some type of, you know, illness that that has an effect on our lives. And I think it's 1 in 3 by the age of 65, but please don't absolutely nail me on that one. And what it is trauma and that type of protection. So it's trauma and TPD, total and permanent disability insurances. And what they do is they allow for either a lump sum or an ongoing payment. So again, it's policy based.
Mm.
So you would want to sit down and understand what we're talking about there. But if you get a diagnosis, as an example, of cancer, then some of those policies pay out a lump sum. And that's nice to know you've got that lump sum. So you can think about what it is you're trying to protect. So you can focus on getting better, and you know that money is going to be available there to you to look after you. So again, it's about defence and mitigation. So I would say definitely speak to a qualified specialist in this area,
yeah,
and get that advice. So you've now got this holistic wrap up.
Yeah, now Ben, well, it's, you know, 18 and a half minutes. We often go a little bit over our 20 minute allocation, but for the last 4 podcasts, we've been talking about the property investment formula: asset selection, borrowing power, cash flow management and defence. So effectively, that's the 4 areas of mastery that you need to cover if you're serious about investing in property and also serious about building a property portfolio, whether you're a first-time property investor or whether you're an experienced property investor. So it's been fun, Ben. It's certainly, we're committed to providing free education and information through this podcast, and I think we've delivered some real gold in our first 5 weeks. So for those folks who have been listening, if you're happy to pass on the word, if you could go to either the Android store or the iTunes store, I've learned from
very
last
good
week.
Yep, you've got both of them,
so we can get a 5-star rating. That's going to help us get our message out there about how to get the insider's guide to property investing. And also, if you're social media savvy and you love to follow us on Facebook, Instagram or Twitter, you can do that. So next week we're actually going to cover off the first questions that we've got, listener questions, Ben. So
yeah,
we've got
Q&A session.
Q&A, which I think is really good because that's where the people who are actually on the ground doing the investing can fire some good questions at us. So if you want to go to thepropertycouch.com.au and leave us a question, we'd certainly be happy to answer those, hopefully next week. But if we don't get to them all next week, we'll do them periodically throughout the podcast.
Over time. Look, we've got lots to say, and that's what I love about this podcast. There's no hype to it. It's all just factual-based, you know, from two investors who have had over 35 years of experience in doing this and in helping hundreds, if not thousands, of clients. So it's a good news story, and we want to share that message to everyone out there.
Exactly. So there you have it, folks. The property investment formula, asset selection, borrowing power, cash flow management, defense. So for those of you who celebrate Easter, I hope you have a great break over this long weekend. For those of you who don't, I hope you get a good chance to have a break from work and spend some time with your family. So Ben, until next week,
arrivederci.
See you, folks.